Good morning. We have the Department of Transportation with us, Agency 45, and we have Director Cox and his staff. And Director Cox, throughout your message today, I would like to go through the federal funding, the air enhancements, surface projects, and your WyoLink in any order that you want to do. We kind of talked about that, and also introduce your staff for us so that our new members know who all you are, and certainly make your comments on the agency. Thank you.
And Director, I apologize in advance. We've got members that are going to be coming in and out because we've got multiple committees, so don't feel badly about it. It's just going to happen.
Not anything you said.
Unless you want to feel badly, then go ahead and feel badly about it.
But it's Wednesday.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for having us here. First of all, what I want to, say to this committee, this is my seventh session appearing before this committee in this capacity, and in a twisted sort of way, I suppose. We appreciate the dialogue and the interaction that we've had over the years. You folks, in our view, you folks have listened. You've certainly challenged us. It's been vigorous at times. You've supported us in the big picture. You've supported your transportation system and our stewardship of that. And so I do want you to know that we do deeply appreciate that very much. To introduce the staff folks that we've got here, let me begin by introducing Ted Ertman, who is a transportation commissioner. He's a member of the commission from Newcastle. Ted is here with us this morning. Chief Engineer Delbert McComey, with whom you are familiar, I believe. Assistant Chief Engineer Tim Hibbard. he's wearing dress shoes this year, too. Assistant Chief Engineer Tim Hibbard is here. He's in charge of operations for the department. Aeronautics Administrator Dennis Byrne is here. And also Amber Schlabs, who is our Air Service Enhancement Program Manager, is here. Sandy Scott, our Commission Secretary and Legislative Coordinator, is here. And then Kevin Hibbard, who you all know quite well, I think, our Budget Officer for YDOT, is here as well. Madam Chair, what I'd like to begin by doing is just taking about 1 minute and giving you, and I'll just follow the topics that you mentioned in that order as we go through this presentation this morning. To begin with federal funding, let me tell you what we believe the picture looks like from the standpoint of Congress and what comprises a new beginning. Really, things have changed dramatically, particularly in the House, as you know, with the results of the election. And that is going to have a dramatic effect on the progress of the transportation bill, which is now about a year and a half overdue. We do expect some movement this year, which is a good thing. Representative John Mica of Florida is now chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and that committee will author the new transportation bill. We believe it will be, we have every reason to believe that it will be more conservative than Representative Oberstar's previous proposed bill, and actually I believe that's a good thing because you'll see movement this time rather than people simply just throwing up their hands and saying, this is not only twice the size of your proposed bill to Oberstar in the past, but also it will be more conservative and I think more fundamentally based in the traditions of the program, formula funding, those kind of things that we think are good for the state of Wyoming. It's more likely to get action. We do anticipate at the bottom line of that bill as it progresses through, at least our read on the mood of the Congress at this point seems to be aimed very sharply toward you exist, meaning the transportation program nationwide, you exist on what you're taking in, which means that the likelihood for federal funding for Wyoming for the future is probably less. Notwithstanding that, I will restate my optimism because at least I think that the bill will gain some traction and some momentum. Representative Mike is going to hold a series of field listening sessions prior to coming up with a full draft of the bill. We don't know exactly what regions will be hit by that. We anticipate all the regions in the country. And we're watching for those to be scheduled, and we will certainly look for an opportunity to take part in those. We've had an opportunity to convey clearly our rural state's message. I personally had the privilege of meeting with Representative Micah's transportation chief on his committee and on the T&I committee, and who will be heavily involved in authoring the new transportation bill. And so we were able to have about a one-hour sit-down and talk about rural issues. And he was very attentive. I was impressed by that meeting. Between now and then, whenever that is, we're operating on continuing resolutions on 2010 funding levels, so we will remain flat unless there's some rescissions or something like that. Right now, that's authorized through March the 30th of this year. That's the best that we can tell you right now, as almost as usual, at least certainly as it was last time. The transportation bill is very late in gaining some momentum, and we'll see if the new makeup of the House can push that into motion with a new approach.
Dr. Cox, could you give us just ballpark numbers that we could, with respect to the dollars that you generally have from for embedded road construction with state funding, and then what generally you see from the feds? And I mean, they're in your mind, but if you put those to numbers for us.
Senator Nicholas, what I'd like to do is have Kevin Hibbard answer that question, if that's okay with you.
Mr. Hibbard?
Kevin Hibbard, Budget Officer of the Wyoming Department of Transportation. For your convenience later, and if you have time, you can go out to the Department of Transportation's website and see these statistics. We have them in our administration budget folder on our web, and everything I'll testify today is currently out there. Basically, what we have in 2011, because we operate on a fiscal period, a single fiscal period, we anticipate $549 million in total revenue. Of that revenue, $254.2 million, or 46% of that, will be state sources. That would be including highway user fees, which are gasoline, diesel fuel taxes, motor vehicle registrations, driver's license, et cetera, for about $148.8. Mineral royalties and severance taxes that the Department of Transportation receives is $73,184,000. We also have some general funds in 2011 for Wild Inc. with $1.2 million. We have air service enhancements of 1.6 and airport improvements of 5.1 for a total of general funds in 2011 of $8 million. We did have $50 million in the appropriations bill for surface transportation. All that $50 million was let to contract last year by the end of the close of our fiscal period. Our fiscal period does operate on a October through September time frame. Other sources of revenue, we have miscellaneous revenue, the costs associated with the aircraft of 1.2, city, county, and other matching funds of $6.2 million. There's a significant amount of money in our budget that flows to local governments for bridges, for their road systems, et cetera, and the federal matching requirements that we have on those funds when the cities receive them, the cities do pay for those matching requirements. Also, we have authority to render service where the Department of Transportation is asked to provide services for local governments or the Game and Fish or some other state agency, and we anticipate about $9.6 million coming in from authority to render services. And then just miscellaneous revenue, about $3.7 million, and you can go into the budget presentation on the web and see the details on that. I won't get any further in that. Sums up the total amount of state revenue that the Department of Transportation anticipates in our fiscal year 2011. Our federal sources, the Highway Improvement Program, Surface Transportation, we anticipate $240.9 million, and that's for our maintenance and construction activities across the state highway system. We also have federal grants that we anticipate of $54 million. Those federal grants are largely airport improvement grants. The Department of Transportation does hold auspice over the federal funds that flow through the Department of Transportation to local government airport assets, and we work with our local governments for their airports. That's about $20 million. We also have about $11 million of repeat offender open container, and really that repeat offender open container money can be used on system for surface transportation. And what that is currently our laws, our state laws for repeat offender, that's a person that has multiple DUIs, and open container, where you have an alcoholic beverage in your possession that's open in public. Our current laws do not meet the suggested federal requirements. So the federal government has enticed states through diversions from our core highway program to safety-related activities for our highway system. Now, this is not a loss of federal funding. This is simply moving money from our core highway system to safety-related activities. Now, the majority of that money goes into our highway system surface transportation for site distances or curves or guardrails or maybe cable median guardrail, et cetera. Some of the money we have leveraged to do studies and pilot projects like the speed traffic zone that we have on I-80. Where we have variable message signs. We have used some of the repeated fender open container money for those activities in our traffic management center as well. So you can probably add another $10 million to the $240 million that we have in total federal funds for the surface transportation system. There's several other grants that I won't go into detail, but I will hit on one more significant area, and that is our Federal Transit Authority. Our Federal Transit Authority receives about $11 million a year, and that's for our inner-city buses and our rural transit programs. It goes all the way down to providing senior citizen centers with ramps for handicapped. So there is a significant amount of federal money that we do have for our federal transit folks, and we work with Y-Trans, our federal transit organization here in Wyoming, to administer those funds as well. That's the overview, a quick overview of the Department of Transportation's revenue anticipated in 2011.
I mean, if I the big numbers that I think I pulled out of there is your state funding revenue is about $250 million, $254, and your federal dollar is about $240 million. That's about $494. And is that annual or biennium?
Madam Chairman, that is on an annual basis, a fiscal year basis. Our total federal revenue is going to be $295 million. So if you take the surface transportation piece of $250, $240 plus the $10 million of repeated fender open container, the remainder of that is for transit and for airports. So the total of anticipated federal revenue in 2011 is $295.5 million.
So about $500 million then a year is your... You call it so your base or the core of your funding that you typically have.
Madam Chairman, yes, $549.8 million is what we anticipate in revenue in fiscal year 2011.
And then we've augmented that revenue source on occasion. What when you talk about your federal share, so you got $540 million per year for transportation, and then... I mean, if you go back in time, how far do you have to go back to see amounts that were much greater than that, other than the not the state augmentation, because I remember that. But.
Mr. Hibbard?
Madam Chairman, the most significant event historically has been our ARRA money. We did receive $157 million in Recovery Act funding for the Department of Transportation for surface transportation. We also received some funding for airports and for transit. But it's been historically flat. In fact, we're almost 18 months into the current reauthorization for the federal bill, and we are operating on continuing resolutions that are actually based upon 2009 thresholds. And prior to that, the last increase that we received was in the movement between T21, which is the previous six-year bill, and when we went into Safety Lou. And that was maybe about $20 million in total on an annualized basis.
When we hear that you say your federal dollars are declining, I mean, what was the maximum amount of federal dollars you ever received? I mean, what did it look like?
Mr. Hibbard?
Madam Chairman, in 2009, with the ARRA money of $157 million, the total amount was that was the highest point in time that we had, and that would have been in the neighborhood of $375 million in total federal revenue.
How about absent the ARRA, though? I mean, that was a unique thing.
Absent the ARRA... it's been pretty flat, with the exception of what took place about 8 years ago.
The, I mean, is it fair to say that what's, I mean, if your revenue has been flat, I mean, your $500 million per year, is it fair to say that what's eroding it is your purchasing power, not so much your revenue sources?
Mr. Hibbard.
Madam Chairman, that is an accurate statement. In fact, between 2005 and 2008, the Department of Transportation experienced, on average, a 24% inflation factor, we were substantially impacted by the cost of goods and services in the construction industry.
Is that mostly for asphalt and oil and gas, and has that dropped? Come back.
Madam Chairman, it would be mostly asphalt and concrete products, but there was inflation on steel products as well. If you go back in time with inflation, the Department of Transportation, we use a base year. And again, I'm just going right off the presentation slide that you guys can find on the Internet if you so desire. If you use the base year 1987 and you move into 2010, the inflationary factors on a construction price index is tripled. When we talk about a construction price index, that's the cost of steel, concrete, and asphalt. It's not to be related to a consumer price index, which is based upon a gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, and a pound of cheese. But historically, particularly in 2005, 6, and 7, our inflationary factors were dramatic. They eclipsed 24% per year, and since 1987, the cost of doing business in the construction industry here in Wyoming has tripled.
Not a pretty sight. Look at that graph. Yep, you're welcome. Okay. Representative Stewart.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Looking in the budget book, it really doesn't reflect the numbers that you're saying, and I was just wondering, I mean, the budget book shows your total revenues to be $237 million, and just what I could look for to mirror the numbers that you're telling us today.
Mr. Hibbard.
Madam Chairman, that is correct. What you see in your prospectus in front of you is the legislative appropriated piece of the funding that the Department of Transportation receives on a biennium basis. That's a two-year part. That includes any appropriations that the legislature makes to the Department of Transportation for surface transportation. It also includes highway patrol, regulatory administrative, motor fuel, driver services, et cetera. It does not include those funding sources that currently reside with the Transportation Commission. However, in the budget presentation, there is a breakdown of the funding streams that are available to the Department of Transportation in the fiscal period. Roughly 83.43% of the Department of Transportation's total funding is administered by the Department of Transportation's commission. The remaining amount of that money is appropriated through the legislature for those programs that I discussed earlier, including any appropriations for surface transportation.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you. I'm new to this game, and I'm still trying to get my arms around this stuff, but kind of related to Representative Stewart's question, if I'm just looking at the summary table on page 3 of our budget book, and you said that there were $254.2 million in state sources. Maybe I'm just confusing myself.
Madam Chairman, I will attempt to address that question. On page 3 is the roll-up for the legislative appropriated budgets, which includes the Highway Patrol, Department of the Driver Services, Motor Vehicle Registrations, Motor Fuel, et cetera. The total amount on page 3 that was appropriated in column 2 was $237 million. You'll see the appropriations take place, and that's spread across the organization that's legislative appropriated. And then you'll see the funding sources that make up that. You'll see general fund of $66 million, you'll see federal funds of $40 million, and you'll see other funds of $130.9 million. Those other funds that are represented there come from the Department of Transportation's revenue sources that I spoke of earlier. So of that $254 million, that's a single fiscal year amount of money for the Department of Transportation and state sources, $254 million. On page 3, that's a biennium amount, or $130 million of state sources. So basically, you take that in half, or $70 million would be what we would have in our annual budget to support legislative appropriated programs. Legislative appropriated programs came to the Department of Transportation through reorganization in 1990. Several of these responsibilities used to reside in other agencies, but through reorganization, the Department of Transportation took the responsibility, and also we fund those activities as well. And since then, the Department of Transportation has come to the legislature on an annual basis, either supplemental budget or a normal budget year, and asked for appropriations of these legislative appropriated budget centers that the Department of Transportation has. The remainder of the appropriations that take place happen with the Transportation Commission. And as I spoke earlier, of the total amount of money in one single fiscal period of 2011, that is 83% that the Transportation Commission has auspice over. The remainder of that, the legislature has auspice over. It's important to note that the legislature appropriates first, and that what's left after the appropriations for those programs that were taken under reorganization, what's left, the Transportation Commission then appropriates for construction and maintenance. A good way to think about that is the old Highway Department, the Transportation Commission share, the old Highway, the yellow truck fleet, construction, et cetera.
Director Cox, you can continue, and thank you, Mr. Hibbert.
Okay, Madam Chair, we went through page three. Let me just track quickly. I know this is backtracking just a little bit.
That's okay.
But just to go through the document that is in front of you representing the department. I'm going to go quick. If there's questions about any of this stuff, please just interject those. The statutory basis for the department is found on page four, and it describes what Kevin essentially what Kevin has been talking about. Page five, particularly the second section, the bottom half of the page talks about the department's primary functions: construction, maintenance, law enforcement, that being the Highway Patrol, administration and regulatory issues, and aeronautics. Among there's a paragraph there under the administration and regulatory that I won't bother to read, but one thing I will denote, and that is that what is normally known as the DMV in most states is contained in this section. That's where what we refer to as driver services and motor vehicle services. So all your driver's licensing and all your licensing of drivers themselves are contained in that section of the department. Page six. Page six and a couple pages following delineate our performance measures, how we measure our performance as a department. Page six is probably the most germane one to the discussion this morning. It talks about the percentage of road pavements in good to excellent condition, and the same for airport pavements. A couple paragraphs below that performance measure in bold there is the statement that WIDOT is attempting to maintain road pavement condition at the current level of 51% good to excellent. That's the current level. In the year 2000, it was at about 62%. So the combination of the downturn in funding and the sharp upturn in the cost of doing business combined to bring us to that point. The dollar didn't go near as far. We didn't have quite as much to spend. And so we've seen a decline in the overall condition of the pavement. On the airport side, it's 81% currently.
And Director Cox, did you say that 62% rating was in year 2000?
I believe it was, yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I've seen over previous years kind of a grid of all the different states and how we compare. Do you guys have anything like that that you could provide for the committee?
Madam Chair, we do have access to that, and we'll get that for you.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, continuing on page seven, further performance measures, customer satisfaction survey rating. This talks about the 2008. This text here talks about the 2008 results is about 79%. We just heard a briefing from the University of Wyoming survey, research and survey section last week on the results of the 2010 customer satisfaction survey. Those will be presented to the Transportation Commission next month. And just a quick summary is I can tell you that there was a slight tick upward in the overall score. What these customer satisfaction surveys do give us is clear guidance from the public on a number of areas that we can work hard at to improve. But we were pleased to see a gentle uptick in that. 79% is compared to some places in the country is rather good, but we're not resting on that. Madam Chair, moving on to the next performance measure, seatbelt usage rate. As you know, every couple years there is a survey done, And the numbers in there, while I won't go over them today, but the numbers in there are troubling. We had an increase in resident use of occupant restraints several years ago. It was our all-time high. It has declined from that, and the fatality crash rate has reflected that. Page 8 talks at the top about our strategy of attacking that problem. As you all know, there is a primary seatbelt law in the mix this year. I will tell you that we support the idea of a primary seatbelt law, even against the backdrop of a historical, I think, legislative philosophy and frankly, Wyoming citizen philosophy, including me, of being extremely careful to limit free movement. But we believe that a primary seatbelt law is the one tool that we don't have in our toolbox that we can make a great deal of use of in terms of bringing the fatality rate down. When I was, if you'll bear with me, I'm going to make one editorial comment on that issue. It's still pretty near and dear to me. During the time that I had the privilege of serving for 7 years as a colonel of the Wyoming Highway Patrol, every fatality report generated by the Wyoming State Patrol crossed my desk. And I lost count of the number of people that I knew, that I was acquainted with over my years in Wyoming who lost their lives, primarily traceable to the fact that they did not have their seatbelt on. We believe that that if the state were to stand up a primary seatbelt law, that it would erect a deterrent, we hope. And it would begin to further educate, frankly, I was going to say further educate a new generation. I think the new generation knows better than we do. I think it's our generation oftentimes that are the ones who have the attitude about it. But our kids oftentimes are the ones telling us, buckle up before you start driving, Mom and Dad, or whatever. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox there. I did want to make a public comment about that. Performance measure number 4 is the employee satisfaction survey rating. Likewise, we just got briefed on the results of our 2010 employee satisfaction survey. It's a once every 2 years thing. Again, we have... We've enjoyed a little bit of an uptick, but there's always things that we can work on in terms of the internal health of the organization. We strongly believe that if we take the best possible care, using the resources that we have at our disposal, of the Wyoming citizens that happen to be employed by the Wyoming Department of Transportation, that a lot of the service delivery, the excellence in service delivery, is a direct byproduct of the hard work that we do on the interior. Attempting to take good care of our folks. So this is a very important issue in terms of our performance measures. Page 9 is again a summary of the original requested supplemental budget, which has seen some changes under Governor Friedenthal's recommendations and seconded by Governor Meade. So if, Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I'll jump from there to page 12, to the Air Service Enhancement Budget request. Let me give you a quick history. Air Service Enhancements has been a statutory program erected by the Wyoming legislature. Incidentally, it's to our knowledge, it's the only such program still in the United States that is state-funded to actually underwrite and subsidize and revenue guarantee to attract commercial air service in a state. There's very good reasons for that. Wyoming is one of those states that is very difficult because of our low population and even smaller metropolitan centers, if you even want to call them that. It's very difficult to maintain commercial air service in this state to a point which is profitable for the airlines and entices them to stay. So the program was stood up a number of years ago. Originally, up until I think about 4 years ago, the standard budgetary amount for that was about $6 million a year. Governor Friedenthal chose to cut that to $3 million at that time. And at that time, he accurately predicted that the $3 million and the carryover, which is a year-to-year thing, would sustain the program for the next several years. He was right in his projections. The budget request that you see in front of you for 3.9 and some change is reflective of the fact that the program's ability to sustain itself on the carryover funding and the current funding of $3 million per year as reduced several years ago has come to its logical end against the commitments that the Aeronautics Commission has made. At this point, what I'd like to do is have Kevin explain to you what the budget request means. Dennis Byrne, our Aeronautics Administrator, and Amber Schlabs can also help answer questions with regard to anything from the Aeronautics Commission philosophy about what they want to see in terms of programs becoming self-sustaining against sometimes a perception of just continued subsidy. And they can also explain kind of some of the details on how that program works. In this particular budget request before you, Governor Friedenthal recommended cutting it to from 3.9 plus to 2 million. Governor Mead has, as you know, recommended to you to go back to the original amount. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kevin.
Madam Chairman, Mr. On page 12 mm-hmm. of the budget. And I'll just start on the lower part of the page where it says total appropriations 2011-12. This is a historical amount of money that's been given to the Air Service Enhancements Program, or $18 million. Then it takes a couple of takedowns of grants already made and commitments to date and professional service contracts to manage those grants to date. And that would be denoted with a capital letter A. Turning the page, on page 13, you'll see some short-term missions that were probably most likely already in place now, and I'll certainly let Dennis and Amber address that. And that would be another takedown of denoted by B. Then the remainder of the request are some initiatives that are necessary to fund or to maintain the Air Service Enhancement Program into the future. And those are line itemed. And that's the third takedown of the total amount of money that's been appropriated by the legislature to date. And that leaves a residual balance of $3,949,667.66 that's necessary to maintain the funding and the Air Service Enhancement Program through the current biennium. As Director Cox denoted, Governor Friedenthal cut that back to $2 million, and Governor Mead replaced that back to the original request of $3,949,668.
And I think, Mr. Hibbert, I would like to hear from Dennis and Amber, if possible, just a little bit about the enhancement. I mentioned to Director Cox that it kind of dates me, but about 30 years ago, I worked with subsidies and enhancements with airports, and I read this report and looked at this, and I became a frequent flyer this year extensively, and I've seen what's been going on in Wyoming and across the nation, and I need to have a little more enforcement as to what you're looking at doing here. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a microphone? This one. Madam Chair, thank you. Dennis Byrne with the Aeronautics Administrator with the Department of Transportation. Madam Chair, if I could start with basically my philosophy and the Commission's philosophy with regard to this program. Our efforts really are to get air service to self-sustaining levels within the state. Now, there's been challenge to that, obviously. In July 2008, we saw very high fuel prices, which obviously affected the airlines. At that time, they were not profitable within the state, and so the need for additional minimum revenue guarantees was requested and made. And then, of course, throughout the state, we saw an economic downturn, which again affected employments for air service in the state. So overall, we have seen a steady increase from the start of the program through 2008 until those high fuel prices and then the downturn in the economy. We are starting to see things turn around again. We are starting to see passenger numbers increase in all of the communities. And we know through data that we collect that the demand exists in Wyoming for air service to be profitable. It's a matter of really changing habits within the state. Folks are used to getting in their cars and driving, for instance, from Cheyenne to Denver and flying out of Denver, basically because the prices in Cheyenne and other communities within the state are high. We have made progress with regard to that. We have worked with the airlines, and we've gotten fare prices down across the state. We're seeing good fare prices in Cheyenne, and we're seeing good fare prices specifically in Cody and Rock Springs and Gillette, better than it had before.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. What about reliability? I mean, that's what happens is we change the habits, and then it just becomes totally destroyed. You know, I come from a northern community that has had significant problems, and I understand the border challenges just as well as the folks that live in Cheyenne, that it's hard to change those habits. So how does subsidizing these airlines that are not providing good service assist us in getting to that point of reliability and self-sustaining?
Madam Chair, you're absolutely right. The highest, the biggest hurdle, of course, to for us in the state, for folks, citizens within the state to use the commercial air service within their community is fares. Second is reliability, and third is scheduling. When we can enter into a contract with minimum revenue guarantee with an airline, that gives us some leverage to deal with pricing, with reliability, and with scheduling. It takes time to build those relationships in order for the airlines to see that those three things are important to the citizens of the state. And we are making progress. Now, if we don't have some kind of mechanism in the form of a minimum revenue guarantee, we have no leverage with an airline. And we have seen significant issues with reliability with air service in this state. But I can say that it's generally not something we can do about it because that's not one of the areas that we have minimum revenue guarantees with.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm sure that you have the numbers of passenger usage at these different locations. Could you get those numbers to us as far as the numbers that the passengers that utilize these airports? And
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to.
And how does a situation like in Casper when the Delta Jet is ceasing services, how does that impact a community and then the other carrier that's providing services there, the other two?
Madam Chair, anytime you lose frequency, you lose opportunities for passengers to fly. And Delta taking a flight out of Casper obviously is going to have a negative impact in Casper with regard to available flights for passengers to use, for citizens to use. So it's typically not a good situation when frequencies are reduced.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Burns, with this is about $4 million additional money, and you have about $18 million otherwise. With this not seeing anything really changing much in the next year or so, will there be a request for $22 million for this program for the next biennium?
Mr. Burns?
Madam Chair, that's a tough question. The fact is, I think that we can get by on, if we get through 11 and 12, and if employments continue to increase the way we've seen them continue to increase, I believe that the standard budget will be adequate to get us to keep what we have. But keep in mind, there are other communities out there who are requesting additional air service and quality air service. For an example, Sheridan and Riverton. This scenario does not include requests from Sheridan and Riverton to improve their air service. So I believe that we will get to a point of sustainability with regard to in the next 2 to 3 years with regard to what you see on this page. And the standard budget then will allow us to make some headway in developing better services for other communities. But I want to make it clear that this is not the whole picture. This was just simply to keep what we had, so to speak, through 11 and 12.
Thank you. Mr. Burns, I don't know how, you know, we had a discussion earlier about getting some kind of graph that would show employments versus what we're paying in subsidies. So that would be very helpful for the committee to understand that. And to see if there's a light at the end of the tunnel in regards to this. But absent any political will or taxpayers' will, however you want to say it, to set up a state airline, I guess you'd call it, which would answer some reliability issues. But I don't know that $22 million would even pay for the average yearly running of one airplane, so one decent-sized airplane. So absent that, and the bind that I will say Gillette fell into, and I don't know if it was planned by the provider there, but it just worked out that they sort of had us against the rock and the proverbial rock in the hard spot when they decided to raise their rates. But is there anything, can we work for a different provider for the Rock Springs, Gillette, Salt Lake, and get us out of this bind, or are we just going to accept whatever they basically whatever they asked for.
Mr. Burns?
Madam Chair, we really try to fix the problem that exists. Finding a carrier that's willing to come into the state is often a challenge, and finding a carrier that has the equipment available to come into the state is often a challenge. I will give you one success story, and unfortunately, Senator, it's not Gillette, but let me talk about Cody for just a moment. Cody was experiencing some high fares, and we had tried to work for some time with United to get those fares down. It took us 3 or 4 years to be able to build a relationship with United to get them to understand that fares are critical in this state. They listened to what we had to say, and they reduced fares, and we saw increases in employments of probably 30% almost overnight. So the Cody market is almost self-sustaining at this point, and that is really what we're trying to get to. But we can't just go out and ask any airline to come in because of their business model, because of the aircraft that they have available. It would be nice to be able to do that, but in often cases we have to work with what's there and try to get them to understand the importance of fares, reliability, and scheduling.
Mr. Burns, I think you have one of the tougher jobs, actually. Wyoming is positioned, if you look geographically, it doesn't really work. We're one of the furthest points from any major hub. If you want to go around the United States, you'd have trouble finding a Warland or Riverton that couldn't be any further from a major hub. So it is a tough deal, and I don't know that continuing spending $18 to $20 million is going to be the answer in the biennium, but I don't have an answer, and until the taxpayers think air service is important enough that we need to have a state airline, we're going to struggle, and I don't have an answer. Wish I did.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Explain to me how these minimum revenue guarantees work. Just reading those words, I was under the impression that say the Cheyenne American Service to Dallas is $1.4 million, that means they are guaranteed that amount of revenue and their fares are on top of that, and that you would be sort of guaranteed a low fare by providing that subsidy. So explain to me how those dynamics of the subsidy and the fares and how that works.
Mr. Burns?
Madam Chair, the way the minimum revenue guarantee works, and I'll use Cheyenne as a specific example, what the $1.4 million does is guarantee American break-even dollars up to $1.4 million. So there, it's basically just simple math between cost of operation and the revenue they generate. So if they experience a loss of $2 million, for instance, they're only going to be guaranteed $1.4 million for that period. And keep in mind that the goal of this is to build the market to a point of sustainability, and that takes time. So if they're profitable, we don't pay them anything. But if they've lost money in the market, we pay them up to $1.4 million to keep them in the market long enough to build the market to a level of sustainability.
Follow up.
And so in that circumstance where they are profitable, I'm assuming those dollars go back into this program, or what happens to those dollars?
Mr. Burns?
Madam Chair, that is correct. It goes back into this program.
Can you also tell me, American Airlines is relatively new to the system as far as providing service to Wyoming, how that relationship is doing compared to United and Delta and all of the others that are players with different names? But
Madam Chair, I'd have to say that the legacy carriers, the big names, American, United, Delta, we really have gotten to a point where we have very good professional relationships with these folks, and they understand that we've got the data to support what we're saying, and we know what it takes to be sustainable and successful in Wyoming. So those big legacy carriers we have good relationships with. They are easy to work with, easier to work with now, but I can tell you we have had our challenges in the past with working with these folks, simply because what Wyoming or what a particular Wyoming market means to them, we might be 320th on their list of importance throughout their day and list of priorities throughout their day. So we have made significant progress in building relationships with these folks and getting them to understand what's important here in Wyoming.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you explain to me junkets like Allegiant out of Casper has become a popular flight. Are there other companies such as Allegiant coming into the state and providing those services? And, of course, they're not on this list of subsidies of companies that we're trying to hit these outlying areas with. I understand that. But is that increasing in Wyoming, and how does that affect our play on these funds?
Mr. Burns?
Madam Chair, I'll answer the second part of that question first. Allegiant doesn't receive any funds from the state. They're here risk-free from the state's perspective. With regard to the first part of that question, I'm going to have Amber Schlabs answer that. She probably has a little better idea than I do.
Madam Chair, Senator, I think my voice might carry.
Actually, if you just stand close enough, because you're live streaming, Amber,
that's right.
And welcome to JSC.
Thank you very much. In answer to your question, Allegiant really has a different business model than the other airlines that serve Wyoming. They're doing very well in Casper, absolutely. They, in fact, might add a connection to Phoenix. But they're more of a destination market. They're taking people more out of the state of Wyoming. Our goal is to keep those that we have that are Wyoming residents and bring people into the state flying Wyoming.
Amber, while you're up there, maybe you could also just give us a review quickly on the marketing strategy that you use and the return you see from that with the local communities, because you leverage dollars. They can apply for grants and get those dollars, and how effective that is.
Madam Chair, that is absolutely correct. It, at one point in time, airlines were doing well enough they had their own marketing department, so they could do their own marketing. Nowadays, they really lean on the communities to do that, and certainly the commission has helped some of our communities in their marketing endeavors. I think it goes very well. We understand that when we have a new air service in a community, it is important to change consumer habits. So many people are used to getting in their cars. And knowing that we have 50%, up to 50% leakage statewide, what that means is the leakage means that people are driving to airports outside of the state of Wyoming. And that essentially says that there's 1 million passengers that we could be capturing in Wyoming that we're not. So we know that the demand exists. Now it's the time to really pick up on the marketing so, you know, we get the word out and get people to change their consumer habits. I think after changing the fares and really working with the airlines as a partnership, hopefully we'll get them to start looking at those fares.
And I don't mean to pick on Sheridan, but how do you address damage control in a community where you've built up that passenger load and the change in habits, and then you have just a bad blitz, and then the whole community, I mean, it's an incredible wave of people are just driving to Billings, driving to Denver. I mean, they won't even stop in Casper. I mean, they're headed to Denver now. So how do you work on that with a community and with that particular airline too?
Madam Chair, that is a very difficult question. And when it comes to some of these communities that are really struggling with some reliability issues, they kind of tame down the marketing a little bit. We don't really influence that a lot, but we're working with the airline. We've tried to influence reliability. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've just learned in recent days is that Montana has asked for a new carrier, and because of that, we might see some changes as far as service providers. And again, as Mr. Byrne alluded to, there's only so many airlines that can serve our markets, mm-hmm. that have the business model that will fit it. But we're really trying to keep our eyes open and ears open for airlines that are willing to serve those markets and kind of pick up on that.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Committee, further questions on air enhancement? Okay. Let's move on then, Director Cox. Thank you, Mr. Byrne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you will turn to, Madam Chair, I'm going to go to page 17 momentarily here, but Kevin wanted to
Madam Chairman, sorry for the interruption. I did want to make a clarification point.
Sure.
If on page 12, when I denoted that there was a total appropriations through 2011 and 12 of $18 million, that's the total amount that's been appropriated to the Air Service Enhancement since 2005, when we took it over from the Business Council. If you look at the page 15, you'll see that the appropriations for the current biennium started with a standard budget of $3 million, and now Governor Mead is recommending an additional 3.9 for a total biennium amount of $6.9 million. I just want to make sure that the $18 million was the total historical amount that's been appropriated, and the current amount is standard $3 million and an additional recommendation from the governor.
Okay, and I think you were requested earlier just to give us a graph on the inception of you taking it over to now, so that would be good. All right.
Madam Chair, I'm on page 17.
Okay.
On page 17, it begins the request for surface transportation. This original request to Governor Friedenthal last year was based on his criteria. There was three criteria that we had to meet in order to one of three in order to submit a request under the supplemental budget guidelines. Two of them were probably germane to this, the potential loss of federal funds. In our case, the need to use federal funds for these emergency projects that had come up during the year, and I'll get to that in a second. And the other was what we termed as emergency projects. And that's what's delineated on this page and the page following, this list of damage to highways from flooding, highways and bridges, from flooding and landslides, particularly up in the central part of the state, but literally in the all over the state, including the southern end as well. What this list represents is the original request that we made under that criteria to Governor Friedenthal, which amounted to $20 million. He recommended denial of that request, and in lieu of that, to use a slang term, a redistribution over the caps, which is captured in the final paragraph of that. And as you know, Governor Mead has also recommended that be followed. At this point, I'll have Kevin explain anything further on the budget request, and then we'll be happy to answer questions with regard to. I do want to make a statement with regards to kind of the bigger picture on the surface transportation side, if time allows, when we get to that.
Senator Von Platern.
Mr. Director Cox, we're actually dealing with, there is a $14.5 million floating around that's some reimbursement where the federal government took over some of the damage over there. So it was flood emergency money that we received back. I believe that's how it came to us. Why doesn't this fit into that? Why is there no reimbursement federally, or is that still expected or hoped for?
Director Cox.
Madam Chair, Senator Von Flatern, I can probably give you a little bit higher level glance at that. Kevin can certainly give a specific example of perhaps referring to the $14 million. Many of the projects that are listed on these two pages are potentially federally reimbursable. The way it works in our world, however, is we have to spend first state funds on those, and then we submit for reimbursement. So the way it looks on the road, so to speak, is we go and fix the emergency problem. We undertake the project, expend our state funds to do that, and then submit for reimbursement. Depending on what project in this list, some of them are 100% reimbursement. Some of them are with a local match. Nearly all of them will take 2 to 3 years for us to see any money from the Fed at all in terms of reimbursement. So in the meantime, when we spend money on this, it comes out of what otherwise would go to construction projects, hence the emergency request for general funds in this case.
So with that in mind, would you be reimbursing the general fund for any funds as they dribbled in from the federal government, or would that money stay on the stay within the department?
Mr. Hibbard?
Madam Chairman, these emergency projects are currently being funded by the Department of Transportation with existing federal dollars. We took program projects that we intended to work on this last summer and into the spring off the table so that we can address these emergency needs. Now, what we will do is we will bill the federal government for these costs, and then eventually, now, will receive, hopefully, some emergency relief money. We have aggressively applied for emergency relief money with FHWA, our federal partner, the Federal Highway Administration. However, it may be 2 years before we know how much emergency relief money is actually going to be appropriated. In fact, the last time we had an emergency relief project funded, it was 2 years. Right now, we're in limbo because we're under a continuing resolution with FHWA and Congress, and they don't plan on meeting until next week probably, and we may not even hear anything about this until they get a full bill, which may be 18 months from now. So we're spending the dollars that we have available, the federal dollars that we had previously programmed to do something else with, to address these emergency needs. We've applied aggressively for relief through the federal government, and we anticipate those funds to come to the Department of Transportation. When they do so, they will just offset or return the money that we had to come up with to pay for these in the first place. There is no general fund relationship to these funds.
So if I understand this correctly, and I guess I want to make this a public announcement, that the $52 million that you're being recommended as part of the diversion funds that are being split up between you and the other 50 for communities, with that in mind, you're actually not getting the whole $52 million to apply to the roads. You're lacking this amount because you took federal money, the $240 million or so, and used it for these projects. Unless you get reimbursed, you're actually only netting $30 million roughly in this new appropriation.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The net effect is that we're down $22 million on the highway system because we had to address emergency needs with existing federal funds. When and if the federal government gives us emergency management money, then we will offset those losses. I don't believe it will be 100% of the total losses we incur, but hopefully it's a large portion of that $22 million.
I just, for my own edification on this, so if an individual item, so if you're appropriated this whole 20-some million you're asking for in reimbursement at this point from general fund, and a particular item is reimbursed to you, would that then come back to the general fund, or would it be until you hit the total before the general fund would see their money back?
Mr. Hibbert?
Mr. Chairman, when Governor Friedenthal denied the request for the emergency money, that's what it did. It stopped the request for emergency money. There is no longer any request for any funds to flow to the Department of Transportation for emergency relief. He, in turn, just put in a line item for a long-term funding source, which would gain $52 million in the remainder of this biennium, and then after that, 23.6 in 13 and 25.6 in 14. Really, what took place was our budget request was based upon the governor's rule set that he gave us. So we applied for loss of federal funds and or emergency projects. He ignored that request and said, I want the Department of Transportation to receive a long-term funding source from the SPR, the spending reserve account, to the tune of one-third, which would give us in this current biennium $52.1 million, and then after that a long-term funding source of roughly $25 million a year into the future. There is no relationship with emergency funds and general fund at this point.
Representative Wallace.
If I'm understanding you correctly, then what we see on our budget books is not accurate, because this number here is showing that it is coming from the general fund, and then, and I guess part of my question is, this certainly isn't the first summer that we've had slides and road damage, and I'm assuming that these kind of emergency funds were asked for previously, and that the department is receiving reimbursed expenses for prior years if it takes 2 or 3 years. And I guess what we're contemplating here is a change of that. Where previously it was all federal funds being spent and federal funds being reimbursed, and now we're talking about general funds and then it being subsumed into the federal system. Am I getting this right?
Director Cox.
Madam Chair, I think I can answer that. I think what Kevin was trying to say, and hopefully I can articulate this as well, is that the list of emergency repairs that is represented here was recommended for denial in its in terms of its bottom line amount that we asked for. We were following the criteria that Governor Freudenthal set out to make a supplemental budget request. So on the side, just a parallel comment here, I would tell you that 2010 certainly wasn't the first time we had landslides or bridge damage or rainstorms. 2010 was a very significant year, and these are ones that we the DOT had to get involved in to fix either on our system or on adjacent systems. Now, instead of that list of general fund requests that totals 20.5 here, 20.6, the governor recommended in lieu of that what is contained in the bottom paragraph on page 19. So it is not a general fund request to fix these things, but what we're telling you is if you give us no money, we still have to go fix these things. If you give us this money, we're still going to go fix these things because that's the business, that's the reality in our world. They have to be addressed. I hope that helps.
Go ahead. It does, but I think that it remains to be seen whether the legislature will agree with the governor to provide this diversion. So pondering the circumstance where we choose to continue to fund this out of the general fund rather than earmark these funds, let's just follow that through the process. So if the legislature chooses to provide the funding to fix these emergencies from the general fund, and then you apply to the federal government for reimbursement under those programs that you have available to you, and that takes a year and a half, 2 years to receive those funds, do we have a mechanism to make sure that those funds come back to the general fund?
Madam Chair, I believe this committee can footnote same, so you can cause that to happen. So if I understand the scenario that you just asked about, if you were to general fund this list of requests and we got reimbursed any portion of that from the federal government, you could force us as an agency to reimburse the general fund for that. You could require us. That's probably kind of a strong word.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
I would like to draw your attention to page 20 of the budget request.
Right.
On page 20 of the budget request, you will see that the total supplemental request of the $20,592,000, which is the emergency money, has been denied, which is in column 4. There is no general fund appropriation for those emergency projects within this budget now. Going back to page 19, however, the governor did supplant that request with a long-term funding source from the SPR, and that's what's existing currently. If, like Director Cox said, if this was all to change and it became a general fund appropriation for those emergency projects, and we did, in fact, receive emergency money, we would, in fact, pay back the general fund if that was the case. But that's not how this is currently written.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let me try to phrase this question a little differently. Maybe so perhaps we do appropriate the $52.1 million for construction projects with the language that we have now. Would any of those dollars go to projects on your emergency list?
Mr. Hibbard?
Madam Chairman, no, they would not, because we've already got the financial processes in place to fund these with existing federal dollars. And we've already got agreement with FHWA. If we, in fact, get emergency relief money, then they will transplant those funds for us and hold us harmless with any approved emergency money that we happen to receive from Congress.
Thank you.
Okay. Committee, any other questions on this? Go ahead, Delbert. Mr. McComey. You're going to talk about surface projects? Get it hard.
Yeah. Madam Chair, one other thing I think that needs to be noted in this discussion is that
while we funded these projects right now with current money that we have, what that did is we delayed projects that were in the program that were supposed to be built this year and next year with the money we're going to spend. So it wasn't like there's any new money and we suddenly found another pot of money somewhere. We're delaying projects. What the $52 million will allow is those projects now to come back into the pipeline for this year and next year and move forward as they would in the program. Otherwise, they're delayed.
And Mr. McComey, could it be as simple as just saying that we appropriate in 2011-12 the $50 million, which were for surface projects, and you could just simply subtract the emergency projects out of that, which would leave you with $30 million to work with on projects that you had projected for this year and next year?
Madam Chair, that's correct. We actually have we're in fiscal year 2011 right now in our budget. In 2012, we have $80 million worth of projects identified to move forward in addition to the projects that were delayed because of funding these emergency jobs.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Senator Von Flaker.
I think it's really similar to what we did yesterday with school facilities.
Exactly.
The bottom one drops out if there's no money, and then as money comes in, it moves back up, and if the top ones cost you more money than what was expected, the bottom's drops out. So by having to take care of these, some projects dropped off the screen for now, and hopefully we'll come back.
Right. And Mr. McComey, since we all knew we'd be discussing how we would appropriate future funds based on both of the governor's recommendations, have you prepared a list of projects for 12 and beyond that would substantiate what you would use those additional monies for?
Madam Chair, not a project list of new projects. We have a list, and again, I could supply that to the committee, that $80 million that would be available to move those forward. We also have a needs list that goes out beyond. For example, we've got some projects designed that we've delayed back into 2015-16, and in some cases beyond that. They're sitting on the shelf and they're designed. If we get money for those, it depends on how much money, because if we get a larger sum, we could let a reconstruction job, which is more expensive. If we get a smaller amount, we may look at a number of smaller overlays that might be a $2 or $3 million project versus say a $30 million project. A project we have designed right now that could easily move forward is Casper South. That's about a $44 million project, just that one project. So depending on the funding, it really is flexible, but I could certainly get that to the committee on a list of projects.
Mr. McComey, I think that would be good to do that, both the sort of the shovel-ready or the future projects, the needs list with the backlog, and I think maybe, too, part of that, but the $157 million that was spent on ERA funding for shovel-ready projects, which you've either started or completed, we probably should know where you hit those funds, that list of projects for us.
Madam Chairman, we could easily do that. We've got that on both a map and then listing out those projects and how much they cost. And I believe there were 65 ARA projects, and they're 94% completed at this point in time.
And what's the completion rate on the emergency projects that you have listed here?
Madam Chair, we've got just a couple of those smaller projects done at this point in time.
Okay.
And then I've got the list of all those projects, and when we're looking at putting them into lettings, and I could get that to the committee also.
Great, Mr. McComey. Okay, Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question to Director Cox is along these lines. Let's I identify the fact that a continued source of reliable ongoing funding is valuable to your department. But let's say that this committee wanted to use the SPRA account as a reserve account for the spending policy account and had no intention of creating a funding mechanism out of what is considered a savings account. Would you be willing to send to the committee, and maybe as a homework assignment, another ongoing source that maybe your budget department has identified as a more logical place for this to come out of for ongoing funding from you guys? As you go through this, clearly you must have done illustrations in the past of where you'd like to see things happen. And I obviously don't. We can go on like this for a while, but I, I would love to see just a list of ideas of possibilities as we go on with our budgeting process.
Madam Chair, we could do that, and that would include certainly, from our perspective, a relook at the effects of the earmarking in 2000-2001, because literally much of the difficulty that we've experienced over the years is traceable to that. So, yes, we will do that.
Madam Chair, do we have also, you remember the city, towns, and counties comparison of the de-earmarking and then what that led to in total dollars being legislatively directed? Do we have something along those lines of what would have happened, what the difference is what legislatively directed funds versus what would have been in de-earmarking and the difference therein?
Kevin, is that graph you have there from the website?
Madam Chairman, I do. I can speak to the Department of Transportation's relationship to de-earmarking really quickly. And also, LSO has a spreadsheet that they can provide for the total ramifications of de-earmarking and how it applies to all the agencies and the cities and counties. Since de-earmarking, going through the existing biennium, this is 2002 through 2012, the Department of Transportation was impacted by $980 million, almost $1 billion. Since then, the Department of Transportation has received general fund appropriations. $421 million was to service transportation. $15 million flowed to the counties through the Department of Transportation. So of our general fund appropriations that you see in your fiscal documents, $15 million went to the counties for industrial roads and RAP, road milled asphalt. Mm-hmm. $250,000 was a seed program for the motor vehicle insurance verification program, which now the Department of Transportation pays for, and it's about $250,000 a year at the Department of Transportation's cost. Airports have received, and remember, airports are local government assets. They're not Department of Transportation assets. They have received $58 million, and that includes the appropriations for air service enhancements. Department of Transportation also received $56 million for Wildlink, and for transit, remember the FTA I talked about a little bit earlier, $2.7 million for transit for a total of $554 million. But you have to understand that not all that money came to Department of Transportation for Department of Transportation purposes.
Good. Kevin, I think maybe just that one particular graph would be useful. I think that's the one we've referred to a couple of times this morning. Might be a good handout to have for, since not everybody's going to get on the website and deal with that. But that seems to get to the point. And, of course, you're not here to lobby, but I think you should at least mention, as we're looking at alternative resources of revenue, the fuel tax and the change of the cap of FMRs and how that would impact you. And I guess you can include that in that discussion because we certainly had that bantered around through the interim. So.
Madam Chair, we'll do that. If the committee is at least at a pause with questions about the specifics of the budget, I can ramp up quickly here.
That would be good. We've got some other agencies, and we wanted a quick update on Wildlink status.
Okay. Madam Chair, once again, I want to say that we really appreciate the dialogue that we've had over the years. We and the steady growth of support. I took this position in January of 2005. Since that time, and I'm not taking credit for anything because it really has been a collaborative effort, and a huge amount of thanks and credit goes to the governor's office and the legislature for your attention to this. We saw a steady growth of support for highway maintenance and construction by this body. It led to a standard budget amount at its high, at its zenith, of $200 million or $100 million a year. When the economic and by the way, we were closing in on the effects of the de-earmarking that Kevin just mentioned at that time. Now, it was short-lived, but we have sure appreciated it when we had it. When the economic downturn hit Wyoming, the budget had to be balanced, resulting in that standard budget amount being reduced to zero. And then Governor Friedenthal, in this last session, recommended and the legislature appropriated $50 million in general funds, which is, in essence, a replacement of what used to be $200 million. Coincidentally, during that same window of time, the ARRA funds, $157.6 million, that came from the federal government in the stimulus projects, I would say saved our bacon in terms of are planning, and you can see the coincidence of the two amounts. If this governor's recommendation is approved, this biennium will have approximately $102 million in highway construction funds in it. Ongoing would be approximately, if you include the $50 million that was appropriated last year, and according to this document is in the standard budget, ongoing it would be about $25 or $26 million a year according to Craig estimates today. And so it'd be roughly $101 to $102 million per biennium. The good news for that, and this goes to a comment that was just, or a question that was asked just a moment ago, the good news is that it facilitates our ability to plan in the long-term sense, which is absolutely critical in our world when it comes to construction projects. It's a definite step in the right direction. It's critical for us. The bad news is that it still is behind the need, and I don't want to dwell on that, and I don't want to be whining. One of the things that hit me the hardest in 2005 when I walked across the street from the Highway Patrol was the difference in amounts of money that we were having to deal with and discuss. And frankly, what I've seen is that these are gigantic on a Wyoming scale. It pales in significance to Congress, perhaps, but frankly, when we toss around tens of millions of dollars, half a billion dollars over months to years, some people just get angry over that. And I wish I could mitigate that somehow, but all we can do, and I was reminded when I took this position and several times since, that our job is to try to communicate as clearly, always truthfully, and as accurately as possible the magnitude of the need. So this stopping short of lobbying, what I am telling you is that this recommended amount, particularly in the long-term appropriated sense, is pointing the compass in the right direction in terms of our ability to plan over the long term. I'll give you a perspective, and then I'll be done. The funding ratio of federal to state funds in Wyoming versus the national average. There are examples all over the map, but Wyoming is probably 50th out of 50 right now, or in the last 5% at least, and we could probably find that out for you. The national average over the last 10 years or so has been 40% federal construction funds to 60% state construction funds. Wyoming's best day, and that was at that $200 million standard budget moment, was 60% federal funds and 40% state funds. So it was the reverse of the national picture, but it was still the best that we ever had. Today, the ratio is 82% federal funds and 18% state funds. If this appropriation goes through, it'll be about 73-27. Now, I told you that the other states are all over the map, but the national average is 60% state, 40% federal. So that's why we keep coming back. And frankly, the fact that we keep coming back is reflected only in the need that exists on your and our highway system. Madam Chair, the last thing I would tell you is that with respect to the ARRA funds, I think all of us, at least in Wyoming, said, you know, this is great to have this money. We know what to do with it. Who's going to pay for it? That kind of stuff. But we did demonstrate that we were absolutely the best in the nation. We were recognized not only by getting those funds to contract before anybody else did in the country. We've also been recognized by the OMB as a best practice state in terms of our accounting for the use of those funds from beginning to disbursement. So with that and the fact that our past general fund appropriations have been audited and found successful, our commitment to you is whatever it is that you've got a tough job, whatever balancing act that you have to invoke in order and whatever the outcome is to the Department of Transportation, we will take care of that with absolute integrity. And we'll tell you when we're a success, we will tell you that. We'll also tell you if we screw it up. Madam Chair, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you,
Director Cox. And I think that we've just received a handout on the WIO link, and since that's not on our exception budget, I'll allow the committee just to read that information unless Kevin has something to say. And then I'd like to go on so that we could hear from the Office of the Public Defender. So try to wrap up some things, and I appreciate your time, and possibly we'll have you come back on either Thursday or Friday, and we'll try to give you advance notice if we need to do that in working up the budget.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Yeah, thank you all for your time, and have a great day. Okay. So, committee, if you would like to just at your own personal need take step out, go ahead and do that. But we're going to move on with Agency 8, Office of the Public Defender, and we have, I believe, Ms. Lozano is here. Good morning. Thank you, John. Diane, I didn't want you to have to come back later today, so I appreciate, I'm sorry about having that happen, and Liz, I'll hope to get to you also. Unfortunately, I need senators. Well, I guess we went ahead without that. I would like the senators to be here, Diane, but I also would like you to be able to present. So if you just want to go ahead and start, that's fine.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Bill, do you have
Chairman? Diane, did you have a handout at all? Or we did not.
You're just going to go. Okay. Well, I think go ahead and, for the record, because we have...
Madam Chairwoman, I appreciate that, but, you know, we'll do whatever
okay.
You want us to do. You know, our presentation is fairly brief. We
okay.
just made one request, and then Governor Friedenthal added a recommendation to our request. Our request is outlined on page 9 of our supplemental budget book, and the request is simply to convert two AWAC attorney positions mm-hmm. to full-time positions. What we had happen in Sweetwater County is we had, well, originally we had an office that had I believe 6 contract attorneys at various levels of employment leave. We had 3 within a short period of time. Practically speaking, it would have been impossible for us to find 3 attorneys who wanted to take those contracts. Philosophically speaking, we felt that we would have better management control and oversight in that office to create 2 full-time AWAC positions. One was created in January of 2010, and one was created March 1st of 2010. We are simply requesting that those be converted to positions. We are not asking for any funding. The funding for those positions would be taken from our 900 series in the amount that's listed as $193,143. That would just be moved from one series to another.
Great. And I think I would just ask, too, Diane, if with the changes that we've made over the last 2 years, how that has improved your services.
Madam Chairwoman, I believe that it's improved our services immensely, both on the public defender side, but probably more importantly on the guardian ad litem side of the program. We have 3 full-time attorneys now. We've reduced our reliance on independent contractors from 104 down to 39. We also have some attorneys who have agreed to do full-time contracts, so they've given up, you know, all of private practice and are focusing solely on that. You know, the billing practices have improved. We've implemented a payment policy. Overall, not only has the quality of the services improved in the guardian ad litem program, but administratively we have more oversight and control.
So you have much better quality control.
I believe so.
And the 39 that you are working with currently, that seems to be effective and getting good response on that?
Madam Chairwoman, it is. We do have a couple of counties where we're going to probably have to add some full-time contracts just because the caseloads have gone up, but we're okay there also.
Great. All right. Any questions of the committee? It's grown.
It has.
Okay, great. Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would Carbon County be on that list of needs for increased personnel?
Ms. Lozano.
Madam Chairwoman, Representative Stewart, I would say no. We did. We now have some local attorneys in Carbon County who are providing guardian ad litem services. At the beginning of the biennium, we did not. The caseloads there are quite manageable. One of those guardian ad litem attorneys may move to a full-time contract, so I think we're okay.
Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's good news.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time, and we will call you if we had any further questions.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, and have a good day. Okay. We have Agency 160 County and Prosecuting Attorneys, and we, I believe, have Elizabeth Gagan with us. And someone else. Is this Greg? I'm a no-namer, too, today. I have to get mine up. Thank you. Okay, we have the county and the prosecuting attorney, and we have Mr. Joe Barron with us to present their request. Good morning. Any of you want to turn your mic on?
Good morning, Madam Chairman. My name is Joe Barron. I'm the Crook County and prosecuting attorney. I'm here on behalf of the Wyoming County and Prosecuting Attorneys Association. Our president is Jeannie Stone from Campbell County, and I am here in her absence. I would first of all like to thank the folks at the Attorney General's office who routinely fill this budget out for the Appropriations Committee, and that's Laura Gorning and Elizabeth Gagan, I believe, who I'm meeting here today. And essentially, as I understand it, we are requesting a supplemental budget request of $584,200 due to some type of a budgeting error where they cut too much the last time, and then an additional increase in the budget amount, I believe, of a couple 200 and some thousand dollars, and that was due to the additional need.
Mr. Cox, I've read all the narrative on this, and I didn't know if you or Mike or someone would like to just speak on this point, since this doesn't happen often with A&I when we have a budget come forward where there is a fairly large correction that needs to take place. So if somebody – Michael, would you like to do that?
Madam Chair, I got a little happy cutting budgets that time. So basically what I did is I doubled the cut from 306,000 to the 613,000. We didn't catch it until we were working the budgets this time. So it was my error, and I apologize that. That should be the 306 should be reinstated.
For that clarification. Okay, great.
Madam Chair.
Senator Von Plater.
I guess I'm a little baffled. Did I just hear 306,000 should be what number, what page are we dealing with here?
Mike, we're dealing with on page 9 on the narrative. Of the budget, 160. Does that help you, Senator? Okay. So the 306,750 doubled would give you the 613,500. We have a couple of minutes here, Joe or Liz, if you either one of you would want to update us on your group. Or have any activity that sometimes we like highlights of what's going on and if there's been an improvement or what your workload looks like.
Well, Madam Chairman, the just as it relates to budget and otherwise, the County Attorneys Association is trying to have folks down here at the legislature to speak to various committees. We met last week to go over pending bills. We're trying to keep in touch with each other now via conference call at least once a month and during the session at least once a week, so we can go over and review bills and add comment and provide information to the legislature and how it affects the citizens at home. Currently, as it relates to the budget, we've had a turnover, and I've been a county attorney for 24 years. I'm the second longest acting county attorney in the state. Matt Riedel is the first. He started in 1986. Since that time, this is the lowest number of turnover that we have had in any previous election that I can recall. We've had as many as during a four-year term as in a turnover of 11 out of 21 elected county and prosecuting attorneys being turned over. We have more county attorneys with eight or more years of, than we've ever had in the past, and we think that bodes very well. Also with me here today, she's coming to the legislature, is Michelle Burns. She's a county attorney from Park County, recently elected. She had Bighorn County, excuse me, and she had been the county attorney prior to that, and now she's back starting that job, and she's already been to a committee meeting, and I've heard had some amendments made, so through testimony and assistance on the committee, so that's good.
Well, looking at the list of bills that we have before us, I think we'll keep you quite busy for this session. There won't be a boring moment on that. So.
It is overwhelming, Madam Chairman. On another note, the one of the natures of our budget here with what we have, I was just trying to come up with some information. Currently, we have approximately 69 deputies right now. The budget is made up of it pays half the salary of the county and prosecuting attorneys, and as it exists, which is a fairly fixed number since our salaries are set every 4 years for a four-year term. Deputies is a variable number, and the state reimburses $30,000 per deputy. Currently, our numbers are at 69. They're trying to figure out authorized positions statewide is 77. Talking county attorneys, there's turnover because of the election, just things that are going so. Currently, the budget requests that we've made in the supplemental would be adequate to take care of the funding for these things.
Any other questions, committee? Senator Von Slater.
Just for my own edification here, on the governor's recommendation on page 9,
mm-hmm.
where he talks about the governor also recommends that only the actual expenditures be used to build the 1314 standard. So how does that work? Does A&I receive all the cost of this group and then put a budget out dollar for dollar?
Mike, you want to respond to that?
The budget... Madam Chair, the budget division is, we have a WOS report that the Wyoming Online Financial System, WOS report that we can gather the expenditures from for this particular department, and we'll use those.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Joe, and thank you, Liz. Appreciate your time. And good luck with the session.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Let's talk about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's Thursday.
It is.
What's on our schedule?
We have left Department of Corrections for today, and I asked Bob Lampert to come back upon adjournment about 3:30 today, just varying on the floor time.
Then if we got everybody done, and we go into markup tomorrow?
And then we have governor's letters and anything else we want to talk about.
And then markup starting tomorrow at 8.
What do you think, Bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, you know, you have a bunch of issues you need to resolve probably before you mark up, or you can do it while you mark up.